So the introduction to the topic that we're going to be talking about today and probably tomorrow as well, because it's kind of a big topic, and I don't have like a full grasp on it yet, but I just wanted to like get to some of the Rashi Prakim. So the introduction to this topic is as follows. I may have mentioned this to you already. We were sitting with Rav Schechter, and Rav Schechter had to go through, had to come up with topics for the 7 shiurim he had to give at the YU Shavuos retreat program that they have. Right, so he was trying to think of topics, and he said to me, he said, "What are you going to be talking about on Shavuos?" So I said, "Oh, I'm going to be talking about the connection between hashkafa and halacha, how hashkafa affects piskei halacha sometimes." And he made a face and said, and then turned to someone else and said, "What are you going to be talking about?" So he was not particularly excited about this topic. I'm like, "What happened?" He said, "Too esoteric." Like he wasn't at all interested. But I was. So we're going to talk about this topic a little bit. And because I find it interesting, normally when it comes to Psak Halacha, when there is, and there's plenty of Machlokas in Halacha, obviously, but Machlokas in Halacha normally is an outgrowth of different ways of understanding the Sugya. You know, you learn through the Sugya, you learn through the Rishonim, you try to be Mevar the Halacha, and different people understand things differently, and they'll have a different lumdus in the sugya that will lead to a different. That's standard in terms of machlokas in halacha. But every once in a while, you can have a machlokas in halacha that's based on just different ways of looking at the world. It's based on a machlokas in hashkafa that's not really about, primarily about at least halacha. Now, just as a few points of introduction, though. I am not talking about differences in personality. That also can affect a posek. Obviously, poskim are human beings, and therefore sometimes different personalities would lead to a different halachic answer. I just mentioned before, I was listening to Rav Nassim Kamenetsky, Zichrono Livracha, on the way in this morning, and he had given a one-hour, maybe a little more than an hour lecture called The Making of a Ban, where he described the ban on his book, The Making of a Gadol, and he described the difference between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Shach and Rav Eliashiv. And he said that after his book was banned by Rav Eliashiv, he got a phone call from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said to him, "You know, if Rav Shlomo Zalman were alive, this never would have happened." Because Rav Shlomo Zalman just had this incredible sensitivity to people. And Rav Nassim said, I said back to him, "Not only that, if Rav Shach were alive, this never would have happened. Because Rav Shach never would have done it without calling me to speak to me first." So what? So Rav Eliashiv doesn't like people and is irresponsible? No, Rav Eliashiv's personality was that he was kol kulo dedicated to hasmada atzuma in learning Torah. He picked his head up every once in a while to answer a shayla, because that was his achrayus. But that's what he answered. He answered the shayla. So if you didn't give him all of the details, or you lied to him, he would answer your lie. So if you would say, "Oh, Rav Nassim Kamenetsky wrote a book that's called Kuluk Fira, and he says that there isn't a God, and he says that..." So Rav Eliashiv would say, "Oh, that's Kfira." You know, he'll ask him exactly what you tell him, the Metzius says you gave it to him. Because that was his personality. He wasn't interested in really, you know, doing research and talking to people. He was a posek. He gave him the information. He paskin the information that he gave him. Rav Shlomo Zalman was known to paskin people. I mean, obviously, with this incredible knowledge of halacha. But he looked at who he was talking to. Is it an old man, a young woman, a very firm person, not such a firm person? And assessing the psak based on that. So not just straight halacha, but also with a certain sensitivity to the individual. Right? It's an entirely different style. So you could ask the same shayla to Rav Eliashiv and to Rav Shlomo Zalman, who were mechutanim and got along very nicely and were gedolei olam, each in their own right. And you'll get different answers. But not because of hashkafa, per se, just because their personalities were entirely different. So that, I don't think that's wrong to say. That personality sometimes, you know, Rav Schechter tells us that, I never heard this from Rav Schechter, but Rabbi Isaac Rice told me that Rav Schechter said, and then when we were with Rav Schechter, he alluded to it, and Rav Schechter said, yeah, so apparently Rav Schechter said this, that, you know, there's machlokes between the Brisker Rav and the Chazanish. What happens, you know, there's halacha in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be mafresh shumas amaisos. Yeah, you've heard of this halacha, right? So you have to be mafresh shumas amaisos. So let's say you have a whole bunch of oranges, you have an orange grove. right? So you mafresh shumas ma'isos. What do? So you take all the oranges, you cheshbon how much you have, and you mafresh shumas ma'isos, right? What if you've already made orange juice out of it? Now what? Can you be mafresh shumas ma'isos from orange juice? So there's no machlokas that from oil, from wine, from juice of olives, juice of grapes, oil and wine, it can be mafresh shumas ma'isos, because the oil and the wine, that is the pri. Right, that's the pre in its most chashuva form. There is a discussion, though. What about other fruits that produce juices? Is the juice zeya bialma, or is the juice the pre itself? So the Briska Rav held that if you made orange juice out of the oranges, you have an iser tevel because you haven't been mafshumus meisus, and you can never be misakin it because you can't be mafshumus meisus. Something's not a pre. So an iser tevel with no tikkun. Chazanish disagreed. Chazanish held they could be mafresh shumas ma'isos, and apparently the Briska Rav saw this as, I don't think based on a worldview or a personality type, but as emblematic or a good example of the different attitudes that he and the Chazanish had. That the Briska Rav explained that I believe there are certain problems that you just can't solve, in general. That there are issues that are just not solvable issues, and you just have to say, teku, checkmate, there's nothing we can do about it. Chazanish held that every problem that life presents itself, the Torah has an answer to every problem. So it's just different shitos in attitude. So I don't think that those shitos led to that particular psak halacha, because I think that particular psak halacha is a halachic issue of whether, you know, fruits that are made to be juiced are, you know, the juices are the fruit itself, or Elisei Bialma, which has other ramifications as well for Shavias and for other things, but that it's emblematic of who they were, of what their attitudes were. Now, when we talk about Ashkafa, it's a little bit trickier, because most of the time it doesn't seem that we have a clear psak in Ashkafa. We definitely have psak in Halacha. Right, obviously, that's the way halacha defines itself, is that there's machlokas, and we have to paskin. Even if it means going against gedolei olam. It means going against the likes of Beis Shammai. Very, very important people. But you have to do one way or the other. Is there such a thing as a psak in hashkafa? So I'm not sure. I don't know what the answer is. You know, take, for example, Ikarei HaEmunah, we discussed last week. There are three basic shitos. Well, there are more, but let's say three basic shitos about how many Ikarei Emunah there are. So let's chaz over quickly. The Rambam holds how many?
13.
Sefer Ikrim?
Three.
Radvaz?
None.
None.
Or all,
right, depending how you read the Radvaz. Right? So who do we pass them? Meaning, is there a psak in Ashkafa? So this, I'm told, there was, when I started as an assistant rabbi in Shari Tfila, the rabbi emeritus at the time was Rabbi Walter Wurzberger, who was a rabbi of Shari Tfila for many years, a rabbi in Toronto before that, and was a brilliant philosopher. He was a philosophy professor in YU. He was a brilliant philosopher. And I gave the shiur about Hashkafa and Halacha in the Young Israel Woodmere on Shavuos, and his son was at the shiur, and his son told me, by the way, you should know that it was a big discussion in the first Torah Mada journal, whether there is a psak, and the founding Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva of Parnas took one side, and many others took another side of the issue, whether there's such a thing as a psak in Hashkafa, on Ikarei Emunah. I always thought that of course there is, because there are major nafkaminas la'alacha in Ikarei Emunah, so you have to paskin it. Why there are major nafkaminas la'alacha? Because you have to decide who you're going to call an apikaros. What, just so I can know who to be mean to? No, it's more than that. It's who's pasaleidus. Who do you do a Shabbos Aveda to such a person? It's siruf l'minyan. Are you misarif them to a minyan? If a Sefer Torah is written by a normal believing Jew, you have to treat it with tremendous kavod and kedusha. A Sefer Torah is written by a min, Gemara Sanhedrin says, what do? You burn it. Major nafkamina la'alacha, no? You have to know who's who. Are you misabel on the person? If the person dies, is there avelos? If they shecht an animal for you, is shchitas kshera or shchitas psula? So if you hold, like Rabbi Yosef Alba, for example, that the three Ikarei Emunah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah min hashemayim, schar va'onesh. And you have a guy who's not mitzape b'chol yom sheyavo that Mashiach is coming. He believes he came already, let's say. So he's not waiting for Mashiach. Achakalo b'chol yom sheyavo. What's he doing? So, and he shechts an animal for you. Can you eat the animal? Shechitas u'ksheru, shechitas u'psula. Right, this guy believes, let's use the example, Shabtai Tzvi. That's an easier example to use. Shabtai Tzvi. He believes Shabtai Tzvi already was Mashiach. There's a group, Shner Lyman said, there's a group of Mishugayim that still gets together in Washington, D.C. every year, of like four guys that still holding out for Shabtai Tzvi. It's insane, right? But, so someone does a Shechita. So is that a Shomer Shabbos? He has a beard that's longer than mine. He's got a long coat, everything, you know, and he shuckles when he davens, you know. Can I eat a Shechita? These are very important halachic questions. Does he ruin my wine? So I don't know how you can say that there's no psak. You have to paskin in Ikarei Emunah. But where it gets tricky is, what about other hashkafa issues? Is there a psak in hashkafic issues? You know, Rabbi Slifkin wrote a series of books years ago, and they too were banned. So I remember when I was once in the old Sfarim store in Farakwe, Kitov, and I saw we used to always go there when I was kids, when my brother and I were kids, we would always go get our Gemaras for the school year at Kitov, and the Rabbi Kaminsky, who owned the store, used to tell my brother and I, come back at the end of the year, and if I give you a bechina on what you learned, and you know the answers, you'll get all your money back for the Gemara. So I think after a while he stopped giving that offer because my brother kept, yeah, my brother's not stopped, you know, he's pretty good. So then it came to a point where he's just like, only for the little one, not, you know, not for Avi. So I saw a book there called The Science of Torah. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I bought it, never read it because I'm not really that interested in science, but I thought I would read it. And one of my cousins who was learning in Shara Torah in Queens at the time asked if he could borrow it because he's a brilliant guy and he's interested in all the stuff. So I said, sure. And he passed it around the whole Shara Torah dorm. And because of me, the entire Yeshiva Shara Torah read The Science of Torah at the time. And then it was banned. Like right after that, the book was banned. So why was it banned? I'm not going to get into all the details. But Rabbi Slifkin, you know, age of the universe, things like this, right? That the universe is millions of years old or billions of years old and not 5,779 years old. So, you know, things of that nature. And, you know, Chazal's knowledge of science, you know, that those kinds of things. So Rabbi Slifkin, part of his response was that I didn't say any chidushim. Meaning everything I said, you could find in the writings of Shem Shofal Hirsch or the Malbim, or, you know, like Gedolei Olam, previous generations have said all these things. They may have been not the majority view in each of their generations, but they were significant people. So what was the response back? You're going to put Hirsch and Chayrim? You're going to put, right? What was the response back? So the response back was, yeah, they had a right to say it because it hadn't yet been decided, the halacha. But now we've paskined the hashkafa, and the psak is against them. So is that true that you could do that? That we paskin hashkafas? I don't know. I don't know the answer, whether you can paskin hashkafa or not. I mean, I have a feeling, but I don't really know the answer. I don't have any rayas. Hashkafa is much more tricky than halacha. See, halacha, you could know a sugya. And even though Divrei Torah Aniyim b'makom echad, Ashirim b'makom acher, and you need to know Kol HaTorah Kula in order to develop a real, real solid basis for a psak, but you could know the basic sugya well enough to understand the psak at least, right? To know that this psak is correct. When someone gives a psak in hashkafa, when someone gives a statement of hashkafa, you really need to know Kol HaTorah Kula, because it's not even a sugya. It's really a sense of Ratzon Hashem and of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu mofia ba'olamo. Like, it's really a major undertaking to have the confidence. In fact, Rav Kook writes in a letter in Igros Haraya in Simon Kuf Gimel. I think Rabbi Isaac Rice sent me this one also, if I'm not mistaken. He wrote a letter to the Doris HaRishonim, that writes that the Yerushalmi understands that Inyani Machshava and Deos can be decided in Eretz Yisrael because of the Kesher to Nevua in Eretz Yisrael, but it can't be done in Chutz Laretz. Meaning that there's a tremendous Siyata Deshmaya that's needed in Hashkafa that you don't necessarily have in Halacha. Halacha Amelus could make up for that Siyata Deshmaya. But in Hashkafa, you need Siyata Deshmaya. Another word of introduction. Not every time there's a Machlokas in Halacha that seems like it's based in Hashkafa, is that necessarily true? Sometimes it's the reverse. The halacha created the hashkafa rather than the reverse. Who is most famous for deriving hashkafa from halacha and lamdas? Soloveitchik. You read his essays on hashkafa; they're all based on halacha. He found a hashkafa of the halacha. It was an unbelievable thing. So a lot of times you have that. You have halacha. You know what? Rav Soloveitchik's understanding of, let's say, of Avelus of Svira, or Avelus of the 3 weeks, right? So his interpretation of the halachos, that's maybe not a great example. There are many other examples where Rav Soloveitchik used the hashkafa as the framework, used the halacha rather as the framework within which to understand the hashkafa. There are also times where it just seems like it's a machlokas in hashkafa, but it's not. It's just straight halacha. For example, Rav Shechter used to always give the example. There used to be in the Yiddish newspapers right after Shemitah year, right before Sukkot, whether you're allowed to use Shemitah Esrogim or not, right? Heter Mechira Shemitah Esrogim. And the Satmars used to take out a big ad that the Rebbe of Yelish says, absolutely usher to buy Shemitah Esrogim, you got to buy from other places, can't buy from Eretz Yisrael. And a few pages later, the Mizrahi took out an ad that Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik holds, that you absolutely can and should buy Shemitah Esrogim from Eretz Yisrael. So everyone said, yeah, you know, anti-Zionist, Zionist, right? Everyone just assumed it was a matter of hashkafa. But it's really that particular machlokas was actually not based on hashkafa at all. Rashi in Yevamos and Daf Kuf Chaf Beis quotes that any produce that was guarded during Shemitah is asur. And Rabbi Natan seems to follow that Shita, and the Satmar Rebbe held that since there's Nisra Achila, even though it's only Nisra Drabanan, the Esro can't be used because it's asur b'achila. But Rav Soloveitchik held that the nature of the Isser is only a knas to not encourage people to guard their fields. The Ramban in Parshas Bahar says that it's not a cheftza shel Isser of Meshumar. It's a knas not to purchase directly from someone who is shomer their field. So it's not technically an Isra Achila, and therefore is mutter to use. So this is a very technical halachic argument that has absolutely nothing to do with Zionism at all. So what we're going to do over the next day or two is we're going to divide this discussion of halachas that are affected by hashkafa into three basic categories. Three basic categories of hashkafa. The first and largest of the categories is Eretz Yisrael. Right? Hashkafa is about, I shouldn't say Eretz Yisrael, Medinas Yisrael. Hashkafa is about how we view the Medina and where that plays a role in halacha, in how we behave and what we should do. Second category is secular society in general. Secular values, secular society, feminism, what are, you know, attitudes, secular studies, right? Other shar chachmos, things like that. What our attitudes toward them are, and based on the different attitudes, and by none of these things am I making judgments, at least not in this forum right now, about who's right, who's not right, or who I agree with, or who I think. I'm not a bar hachi in terms of hashkafa. I mean, I certainly have my own masorah for my rebbeim, but that's not the point over here. The point is just to trace, to show how it leads to different conclusions. The third category is science and chazal, and just chazal in general, right? How perfect were chazal in terms of their scientific knowledge and things of that nature. So let's start with Eretz Yisrael. So issues relating to Medinas Yisrael. So first issue is the establishment of Medinas Yisrael a miracle? Issue in Hashkafa. Is it a nes that we have Medinas Yisrael? L'may nafka mina l'halacha? Whether it's a nes, I mean, that's a pure matter of hashkafa. Do you view it as a nes or not? L'may nafka mina l'halacha? Do you say halal on Yom HaTzmut? right? So Hallel Yom Ha'atzmaut is one of these things that seems at first to be a pure hashkafik machlokas. You know, people make judgments about you when they ask you the question, did you say Hallel today on Yom Ha'atzmaut? And depending how you answer, they're making like an immediate judgment, like about who you are. You know, if you say, have Hallel without a bracha after davening, chatzi Zionist, right? No Hallel, yes Tachanun, zero Zionist, right? No appreciation for the Medina at all, whatever. Full Hallel with a bracha. You ever been to, how many guys here? A bunch of you guys learned in Hezri Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, right? The most confusing day for an American bachur in a Hezri Yeshiva. And it's well as Yom HaTzmud, because like they pull out like the entire Jewish calendar year, and you know they're blowing shofar, they're doing Shir HaShirim, they're like eating matzah, there's like, you know, there's some guy shaking lulav in the corner, like, you know, someone's like menorah, like, you don't know what's going on, like there's all these things. So you know, he said, oh, full Hallel with the bracha, tzkiyah shofar, musaf, you know. Yeah, then that's a Zionist. So the truth is, this is not a purely hashkafic issue. The discussion only begins with a certain assumption in hashkafa that this is a positive development, right? I mean, certainly if you assume like the Satmar Rebbe that this is a tragic development, and you should realize Satmar Rebbe did not say this because he hated the Jewish people; he loved the Jewish people, and his understanding was that. You know, right or wrong, his understanding was that as more and more Jews gather into the Medina, it's just going to put them all in one place so that someone's going to drop a nuclear bomb, you know, chas v'shalom, and that's going to be, you know, worse than the Holocaust. In addition to the fact that he thought that the Medina is going to be a spiritual destruction that is worse than the Holocaust. So that's why, you know, so if you assume that it's a negative development, then obviously there's nothing to say Hallel for. But if you assume it's a positive development, whether you say Hallel with a bracha, without a bracha, chatzi Hallel, that's not necessarily purely hashkafa. In fact, some of the biggest Zionists I know say chatzi Hallel without a bracha after davening. And lesser Zionists might say full Hallel with a bracha during davening. Why? What's that issue about? So first thing you have to realize is, and Rav Avadia Yosef has a beautiful essay on this in Yabia Omer Chelik Vav, Simen Mem Aleph. But the first thing you have to realize is that the decision to say Hallel or not to say Hallel cannot be taken lightly. It's not like, what do you have to lose? What do you have to lose by saying it? What do you have to lose by not saying it? You know, in Satmar they say that someone posted a picture of a sign in one of their Batei Medrash, that, or maybe all their Batei Medrash, I don't know, that says that on Yom HaTzmaut, on Hey Iyar, you say Tachnun even if there's a bris. Right? That you know, Dafka, I have to say Tachnun even if there's a bris in the bris marriage. Joke's on them, because now most of the time we celebrate it not on Hayyar anyway. But okay. So why is it not a simple decision? Because there's a Gemara Masech Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Dalid, where the Gemara tells us that Chizkiyo HaMelech was ra'ui to be the Mashiach, but he didn't make it because he didn't say Hallel when he defeated Sanhedrin, for failure to say Hallel when Hallel should be said. On the other hand, Mar Shabbos Kuf Yud Chesem Beis, Kolomer Hallel B'chol Yom, there you go, Harizim Mecharif V'Megadim. You can't say Hallel every day. Hallel is supposed to be reserved specifically for very special occasions. You're not allowed to say Hallel every day. It's like, you know, every kid gets a trophy, so nobody's special. It doesn't work that way. So the Gemara Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amar Aleph tells us that you're supposed to say Hallel when a nes happens for the Jewish people that brings us from tzara to geula, and you know, and Rashi says, and that's why we say Hallel on Chanukah, right? Because we went from terrible tzara to geula, and that's why if a miracle occurs, so certainly we would say Hallel. Magen Avraham Mishra Brura in Tafresh Peivav say that a community can make their own Purim celebration if a miracle occurred for their community. So the question is the Hakamas HaMedina a miracle that happened for the entire Jewish people, right? Or is it a great event of Geula that happened for the entire Jewish people? So you can take issue with both of those things. First of all, is it a Geula of any sort? That's certainly not the completion of a geula, right? Is it a great event for the entire Jewish people? So some argued, no, it's a great event for those who want to live in Israel. But there are lots of us that don't live in Israel. Others argued, do you know any Jew who hasn't, or religious Jew at least, who hasn't been impacted by the fact that there is a Medina right now? By what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, by the Torah learning in Eretz Yisrael, by the fact that it's under Jewish sovereignty? How do you say that, or even the fact that every time there's anti-Semitism here, people say, oh, we better run to Eretz Yisrael. We better run to the Medina, because that's where we have a government that will for sure protect us. Meaning the fact that we have somewhere to run this time. So that worthy of debate. There's a Maratz Chayis and Shabbos on the Chanukah Sugis, Mesach Shabbos, that says, say Halal on Chanukah because of, only because of the Nes Nigla on Chanukah. He says, you know why I say Halal on Chanukah? Not because of the Nes Hamulchama, but because of the Nes Pach Shemen. How does he know this? Because the Gemara says, my Chanukah. And what does Gemara answer? My Chanukah, well, what does it talk about? The Pach Shemen. And then it says, and that's why, Lahodos Lahala. That's why we have to say Halal, only because there was a Nes Nigla. So if you accept that Meretz Chayis, then you might argue, no Nes Nigla over here. The counter-argument is, what are you talking about? First of all, in Al HaNisim, we talk about the Nes HaMelchama. Second of all, in the Gemara, Misach Megillah wants to know, why don't we say Halal and Purim? It gives a whole bunch of answers, such as...
It's in
Chutz La'aretz, Kriyas Zuelula, Akati Avdei HaShveiro Shanan. Why doesn't the Gemara just answer it wasn't Nes Nigla? I mean, that was the whole point of the Purim story, is that it was Nista, right? Aster Astir. Yeah? Why doesn't the Gemara just answer it wasn't Nes Nigla? So maybe you don't need Nes Nigla. You could also argue that there was a Nes Nigla. You know, the Rabbi Jachter wrote a beautiful article about Halal on Yom HaTzimun, and he quoted from Rav Amital, Zichron Levracha, Rashiv and Gush. Rav Amital said that when he reported to fight in the War of Independence, he was immediately given the rank of an officer. And he said, what? Like, he showed up and he was given the rank of an officer. They said, oh, you just told us you've shot a gun before in your life. Officer. There were people that were sent out to war with one bullet. I mean, it's pretty miraculous considering what we were up against. So, okay, so there's room to argue. Others say that, how could you say Halal when the security of the Medina, and Shuvas Yaskal Avdi discussed, the security of the Medina has always been up in the air. We've never really had 100% confidence in the security situation. And yet others say, the Shuvas Kol Mavaser, or Meshulam Roth, that you could say Halal with a bracha, he thought. So this is, you know... And then there are other Ashkafa issues related to it. You know, the Mishnah Berurah paskens in some ratio tests that you only say Birchas HaGomel when you fully recover from an illness. If you're only on the road to recovery, you're not there, it's not time for Birchas HaGomel yet. So maybe a similar thing. You only say Halel when we fully recover. And, you know, this isn't it yet. We're not fully recovered yet. Or the Gemara Brachos Daf Nun Tes, that if a person, you know, on the flip side, if a person hears that a relative died and left him a Yerusha, so what do you do? Baruch Dayan HaEmes on the Patira and Shechianu on the Yerusha. So, okay, maybe, yeah, the security situation is not great. Maybe we're not so proud of the spiritual status of the government or whatever. Maybe there are issues that we have. But there's so much good that you need to say a bracha, and maybe that itself warrants halal. So it's not entirely a hashkafic debate, but it's certainly heavily influenced by hashkafa, right? That's one. What else? What else relating to the Medina? What else relating to the Medina? Meaning, we said the question is the Hakamas of Medina a miracle? So it's okay. So issue number one, can you say halal? Issue number two, halachic issue number two relating to whether it's a miracle. Should there be a holiday? Forget about Halal. Should it be a Yom Tov that celebrates it? Meaning, Yom Tov to the extent that you sacrifice Minhagei Sfira. All of a sudden, you know, remember those who learned in Hezer Yeshivot? The Israelis, haircuts, shaved. They found a suit sometimes. like, where did that even come from? Like, how do you even own one? like, the unbelievable, right? So is there a Yom Tov? Does it suspend Minhagei Sfira? In DRS, they always have dancing and singing and music, whatever. So someone asked Rabbi Kamenetsky, that isn't it true that Rav Mordechai Willig, the posik of the yeshiva, holds that you're not supposed to suspend Minhagei Sfira, V'yom Atzmaut. So he said that when he called Rabbi Willig told him that you have no right to ask me this shayla. He said, what do you mean I have no right to ask you this shayla? He said, because Halb has been around as an institution for a long, long time, and this has been their practice. So you have to continue the practice. You're not allowed to just ask the shayla and start changing everything now. You have no right to ask shayla. Had he asked Rav Shechter, Rav Shechter would have said, yeah, you should have music and dancing and everything. Sure. Rabbi Willig personally holds no. Rav Shechter, yes. Why? Because Rabbi Shechter is a bigger Zionist than Rabbi Willig. So what's it all about? So it's an interesting discussion, because Rabbi Shechter would say not to get a haircut for Yom HaTzmaut, not to shave. But yes to, well, shaving is a separate issue, but not to get a haircut, let's say. So the explanation is very simple, that if Yom HaTzmaut is, Rav Shechter tells, we have a reshus to be Kaveh Yom Tov. And to be Kaveh Yom Tov, you have to celebrate. So whatever would get in the way of celebration, the din of celebrating would overrule the minhag of Sfira. But haircuts are, you know, when do we get haircuts? For Yom Tovim, for Shalosh Regalim, we get haircuts. And for Rosh Hashanah, because it's Dafka Yemei Adin, right? When we show, the Medrash says, we Dafka show our confidence going into Rosh Hashanah. That's when there's a din to get a haircut. Is there a din to get a haircut for Chanukah Purim? No. So Yom HaTzmaut is more of a Chanukah Purim kind of yantiv. So you wouldn't have an obligation to get a haircut. But on Chanukah Purim, you got to celebrate. So you would celebrate. So again, this also, it's based on the premise that Yom HaTzmaut is a good idea, and that it's a legitimate, you know, cause for celebration. So then you could start discussing, okay, how much celebration, and at what expense, right? When? Let's get to even more, more hardcore halachic issues like you. So far we discussed, is it a miracle? Is the government a legitimate government? Another Ashkafic issue relating to the Medina. Is the government a legitimate government? What do I mean, not a legitimate government? Who holds not a legitimate government? Come on, it's not a hard one. Right, it's not. If you read, you're not a Zionist unless you've read, I shouldn't say that. You haven't done your job as a Zionist unless you've read Ve'yol Moshe. You got to know the other side, right? You have to do the opposition research. So he holds very, very strongly that the Gemara at the end of Kesubis is absolutely la halacha. That it's not a nagarat to Gemara. It's absolutely meant to be understood la halacha. He has 187 rayas, I think the number was. 187 rayas that we pass in at la halacha. How we can't be ola b'chama and we can't take over the Medina. And he writes that I have 187 rayas because you may not like one or two or three or 186 of them. But all you need is one. You only need one raya. So others argued, I don't like 187 of them. I mean, I'm not convinced by any of them. But that it's a pirate government. And we have no right, and we just took over this. So Shechter points out, this is a machlokas in Ashkafa. He didn't phrase it this way. But it's a machlokas in Ashkafa that very much impacts Allah in two important ways. Number one, there's a din called Pidyon Meiser Sheni. We just learned, for those doing Daf Yomi. Anyone here does Daf Yomi? No, yes, yeshiva guys don't do Daf Yomi. Becharos Daf Nun Aleph. When you're Balbachim, you'll start to know. Becharos Daf Nun Aleph. The Gemara tells us that a lot of times you need money for certain halachos, but money could be in Shava Kesef also. Most famously, Kiddushin, right? Shava Kesef works also. That's what we do. We use Shava Kesef. We don't use Kesef. But sometimes you need Kesef Sheish Lav Tzura. You need actual minted currency produced by a legitimate government, such as Pidyon Meiser Sheni. You can't be Pidyon Meiser Sheni on Kesef that's not produced by a legitimate government. Can you be Pidyon Meiser Sheni on Israeli currency? If you hold the Sat Rashita that it's a pirate government, then you cannot be Pidyon Meiser Sheni on Israeli currency. But if you hold that it's not a pirate government, that we have a right to have a Jewish government there, so then you can. Or another Nafkmin al-Alach Rav Shachter likes to point out, is the there's a halacha by Ribbis that if I lend you a thing, an item, not money, and then it changes in value, it fluctuates in value, and you give it back to me, same thing. Right? You give me back, I gave you a dozen eggs, you gave me back a dozen eggs, but the price of a dozen eggs changed. It went up now. It's a Ribbis problem. Because I gave you a 99 cent product, you give me a $1.29 thing back. But let's say I give you a dollar, and you give me back a dollar, but the dollar tanked on the world markets in between, or went up in value or whatever, became stronger in between. Is that a Ribbis problem? No, because currency is defined as the, you know, as the base value. What? Only within the country, correct. Currency is defined as, you know, as the you know, that's what we measure everything else against. So if you lend someone 100 shekel in Israel and they give you back 100 shekel, so if you hold that it's a pirate government, so then it's a commodity, it's not real currency. And maybe ribbis. But if you hold that it's a legitimate government, then it's not ribbis. So the nafkamin is la halacha in what is essentially a machlokas in Ashkafa. Do you have to pay taxes in Israel? I have to pay taxes to pirates? A bunch of pirates. They just don't have the eye patches. Dayan, I guess. But they don't have... They're a bunch of pirates. The Ran and the Dharm says that we only have to pay taxes because right, people who know one Ran and the Dharm, that's the Ran they know. Because if we want to live somewhere, then you have to play by the rules of the people who own the country. But we all own Eretz Yisrael, so nobody can tell us not to live in Eretz Yisrael, but that we have to pay taxes if we want to stay. We're allowed to choose to not pay taxes, he says. The counter argument is that what are you talking about? Our taxes, Rav Shachtov points out, our taxes are much more like a shutfus. You know, if you are in, you live in a co-op, let's say. So who pays for the gardener and the light bulbs in the hallway and things like that? There's a fee that you pay for the, you know, for whatever benefits you have as shutfim. So it's not about taxes. It was always about like just giving a government money that they could, you know, that the king could put in his treasury or something. That's what the Gemara was talking about when, you know, Rishonim were talking about. But over here with paving streets, having garbage pickup, having security, you know, things like that. Those are things that just everybody needs. Everybody's got to chip in. To a postal service, although I wouldn't pay for the Israeli postal service, but you know, they're notoriously bad. But is that Lashon Hara? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. I don't know. No, it's Toelis. Don't send mail to Israel. It's a tremendous story. All right, another Medina-related hashkafic issue. Is it the beginning of the Geula? So the Main Afkamina, whether it's the beginning of Geula. So, a couple of nafkaminas. Well, first of all, just very straightforward. What's the most straightforward nafkamina? Whether it's the Reishis Tzmichas Kula Zayin? No? Whether you should say the Tzvila, that it's a Reishis Tzmichas Kula Zayin. Right? Some people are very uneasy about calling it the beginning of the Geula, and therefore won't say the words Reishis Tzmichas Kula Zayin. Or they'll say, Shetehei Reishis Tzmichas Kula, like a Tzvila that it should be. But, you know, if you hold that you cannot say that something that we... I'm not a Navi, I can't say that it's the beginning of the Geula. I think Rav Soloveitchik held that way. That he never spoke about Zionism in messianic terms. Because I don't know when Mashiach is going to come. Rav Shechter thinks that you could say with great confidence that it's Reishis Tzmichas Geula Zayin. That you could say with absolute confidence. Regardless of whether he holds that you should say the tefillah or not, but that phrase is not at all objectionable. Rabbi J.J. Schachter always likes to point out that even with that phrase, even when we're confident, we're so not confident. Right? What is it? It's not geula. It's not the tzmichas ha-geula. It's not the reishis ha-geula. It's the reishis of the tzmicha of the geula. You know, like we're... We're so hesitant. But even more importantly, how important is it to be mechazik the yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael? If you hold that this is the geula process, you better not abort the process. You have to be mechazik as much as you can. And maybe even if that means treating certain things like a major shas hachak in order to allow for the yeshuv to thrive. such as Heter Mechira. Major discussion whether we can rely on Heter Mechira. Beis Halevi, the Nesiv, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Ridvaz, the Chazanish, Rav Eliyashiv, all were against Heter Mechira. Rav Yisrael Chanan, Rav Kook, Rav Si Pesach Frank, Rav Yechim, Rav Tukachinsky, Rav Zevin, Rav Vadya, to some degree or another, allowed for Heter Mechira. So now, obviously, not all of those people took sides on the issue of whether the Medina is Rishus Michus Galasenu, because many of them were pre-Medina, prior to the Medina, and weren't taking a stand on that issue. But it may encourage a posek one way or another. There are major halachic problems with the Heter Mechira. Obviously, what are the major halachic problems? First of all, there's an Isser Daoraisa called Lo Sichanim. We discussed this early in the year, right? Lo Sichanim. Which one of the three meanings of Adzar Dav Chaf, one of the three, Chaf, around there, Chaf Zayin, something like that. One of the three meanings of the of Lo Sichanim is Lo Sitin Lem Chaniya Bekarka. There is the problem that that no one takes the sale seriously. There's the problem that even if the sale does work, it could be that the Kinyan Lenachri is not Mafkia, the Kedusha, to begin with. So there are ways around all these problems, but to work ways around all these problems means that you really feel that it's very critical to keep that yeshuv going in a very strong way, and that without it, it can't. Yeah? Yeah, that might also include whether you could put yourself in a dangerous place for it. Right? You feel that this is like a milchamas mitzvah for the sake of to bring the geula, milchamas aschal to the geula, Chazal tell us. Right? So you hold that. So then, yeah, by definition, milchamas is dangerous. You're allowed to put yourself in a dangerous place. But if you hold that, no, it's just a thing that we have. There's a Medina there or whatever, but you got to make rational decisions about everything. Don't put yourself in danger. So that's also a major Ashkafic issue. And then we have the issues of Yerushalayim itself. Right? What about Yerushalayim Bizmanenu? And maybe we'll pick up with that tomorrow. Is Yerushalayim Bizmanenu Bechurbana or Bibinyana? So maybe tomorrow we'll get into Yerushalayim, and then we'll get into secular values and secular studies, and hopefully also science and Chazal and things like that. Okay. Thank you.